because nirvana is endless, ever new, changeless yet ever changing, and since your ability to experience it, to climb higher up the mountain of meditation, so to speak, also increases as your life becomes more fluid and powerful, your experiences in samadhi, your ecstatic journeys into nirvana are never exactly the same. Samadhi is ecstasy beyond comprehension, Master Fuap continued. During deep meditation, as you start to enter into samadhi, at first every cell in your body will be filled with the fiery ecstasy. This ecstasy starts at the base of your spine, and rises as the kundalini energy ascends up your sushumna. Your sushumna is the primary conduit of the kundalini energy in your non-physical body. It is an astral nerve tube that runs between and connects all of your major chakras. It begins at the base of your spine, where your first chakra is located, and then runs up through your spleen chakra, navel chakra, heart chakra, throat chakra and ends in your sixth chakra, the third eye, which is located in the center of your forehead. It runs in the astral plane next to and along your spinal column. To go into samadhi you must pull the kundalini energy up from your root chakra, the first chakra at the base of your spine, all the way up to your third eye. Then you must move all the kundalini energy you have amassed to your sixth chakra, the third eye, up and into your seventh chakra, which we in Buddhist yoga refer to as the crown chakra. This is the difficult part, because the crown chakra is not directly connected to the third eye by the sushumna. It takes a great deal of willpower, and total vibratory purity, to move the kundalini energy all of the way up to the crown chakra from your third eye. When the kundalini energy enters your crown chakra, you experience samadhi. As I mentioned before, samadhi is the direct experience of nirvana. The crown chakra is the nexus of 1000 dimensional planes. That is why, in Buddhist yoga, it is often referred to as the thousand-petaled lotus of light. The amount of kundalini you are able to bring into your crown chakra, Master Fuap said, will determine how many of those dimensions, the petals of the crown chakra, become simultaneously active. The different samadhis are simply measurements of how many of the thousand petals of the crown chakra you are able to simultaneously access. The more dimensions in your crown chakra you can simultaneously. Please remember, Master Fuap said in a strong and formal tone, that what I have just described to you is only a verbal blueprint of how the experience of samadhi is achieved. It is, at best, a flowchart of how the kundalini moves. There is much, much more to achieving samadhi, enlightenment, and experiencing nirvana than I have expressed to you in this simple verbal description. You learn the subtleties of the samadhis, and how to become enlightened and merge with nirvana, from being personally initiated by, and directly studying with an enlightened Buddhist master. Master Fuap, how does the movement of all of that energy through your chakras affect you? As the kundalini energy moves up your sushumna and passes through your chakras, which it does when you are capable of stopping all your thoughts for prolonged periods of time, it burns away all the impurities that exist within your physical body, your mind and your subtle body. When all of those impurities have been completely burned away, your mind turns into pure light. Then, as light, Master Fuap continued, the essence of your spirit body perfectly enters nirvana. At first there is a slight sense of differentiation. It is like slipping your feet into a pair of shoes that fit perfectly. You can feel your feet slipping into them for a moment. But then, after a few minutes, you don't feel that your shoes are separate from your feet anymore. After going into samadhi for many lifetimes, Master Fuap explained, there is no sense of individuality. You are absorbed into the heart of light without motion. You rest there unknowingly. All awareness of this, or of any other plane or world, comes to an end. There is only light, the pure and perfect awareness of nirvana. Both the depth of your entrance into nirvana, and the amount of time you spend in that perfect absorption, will depend upon the strength of your mind, body and spirit, the amount of energy you have at your disposal, and also, to a certain degree, upon your physical location. Why is that, Master Fuap? All places are not the same. They may look similar to the unenlightened eye, but they are connected to different dimensions, and possess different levels and types of pranic energy. One of the tricks to entering into samadhi, Master Fuap continued, after you have experienced the proper training and learned the secret techniques from an enlightened master, is to be in the right place at the right time. Master Fuap, I asked, what do you mean by training, and what are the secret techniques? He laughed heartily in response to my question. You do want to know everything all at once, he smiled. I suppose that is the American way. Well, he continued, you can't expect to experience samadhi without the proper training, can you? Entering into samadhi is a little like flying an airplane. Without any instruction at all, you probably won't know how to start the plane. With a little instruction, you may be able to take off, but you won't know how to fly. With a fair amount of instruction, you will be able to fly in normal situations. If you want to fly at higher altitudes, where the weather is more problematic but the view is also more breathtaking, you will need a great deal of instruction. But Master Fuap, I thought you said that a person simply had to raise the kundalini energy up their spine and get it to light up their crown chakra? Why would anyone need instruction beyond the techniques necessary to do that? Once again, please be patient. I know that my explanations are, at times, quite long. But you are learning a very complicated subject, Buddhist yoga, and it is essential that you grasp the fundamentals before we venture out together into interdimensional space. Having an enlightened master, he continued, is an absolute necessity for the serious student of Buddhist yoga. Why, Master Fuap? I'm sure it makes it easier and faster to learn any subject if you have a good teacher, but why can't you just learn Buddhist yoga from a book, the way you can any other subject? A certain amount of the basic teachings of Buddhist yoga can be learned from a book, he said with a concerned smile. For example, you can read about the types of things that you and I discuss together. But in order to really practice higher yoga, you need the energy, vibrational purity, example, humor, patience and wisdom of a living master. The first and the most basic thing you gain from studying with a master is pure power, Master Fuap explained. When you are with your master, he transfers high-grade kundalini energy into your subtle body. The empowerments from your master energize and activate your chakras, allowing you to do things that you could not possibly do with the amount of energy you normally have at your disposal. Think of it this way, he continued. If you are a student at college, and you have very little money in your checking account, the scope of your activities will be limited. But if you have a scholarship and you get money deposited into your checking account on a regular basis, then you will be able to do much more. Your master's auric empowerment awakens your past life abilities and talents, and can even boost your IQ. When you study directly with an enlightened master, he continued to explain, you also gain vibrational purity. Just being in your master's aura on a regular basis will detoxify your aura, and even help you to remove many of the negative karmic patterns that you have acquired over the course of your incarnations. Another important thing you gain by studying with a master is example. By watching your master in different situations, you will get to personally see how a Buddhist master displays grace under pressure, in all situations. Life is never easy, not even for the enlightened. As a matter of fact, enlightened masters are often persecuted by the society they live in. Why is that, Master Fuap? An enlightened master is cuttingly honest with people. Human beings are so used to lying to each other, and to themselves, that they have come to call a great deal of their lying the truth. But enlightened masters always tell the real truth. This tends to make them unpopular with lots of people, including their own students. But if what you really seek is enlightenment, Master Fuap continued in a strong and emphatic tone of voice, then you will want and need your master's honesty, even if it bruises your big ego on a regular basis. So what does all of this have to do with going into samadhi, and how physical locations like this valley can enhance that, I inquired. It is because of the pranic currents here, he replied coyly. Exactly what is a pranic current? I asked, in a frustrated tone of voice. It is the invisible current of energy that flows from one dimension to another. If the pranic current is highly charged, which occurs when the energy comes from a dimension that vibrates very rapidly, then the physical area where the dimension crosses over becomes highly charged too. The valley we are in is such a place. If the pranic currents come from a dimension that vibrates more slowly than the energy in our own dimension, then the physical area of pranic crossover becomes negatively charged. What does that do? If you spend time in such a place, it will slow down the vibratory rate of your subtle body. You will feel tired and drained. If you stay there too long, you can become physically sick. In addition, being in a negatively charged area will make it difficult, if not impossible, for you to perceive things psychically. On the other hand, a valley such as the one we are in right now is filled with positive pranic energy. This energy speeds up the vibratory rate of your subtle body. When you enter into meditation here, whether it is a basic level of meditation or samadhi, the added boost that you receive from the positively charged prana that is available in this location will make it much easier for you to achieve a higher state of meditation. When the wind moves in the same direction that an airplane does, it significantly speeds up the airplane, Master Fuap stated factually. If that's enough talking for now, he said with a gentle laugh. Let us meditate here for a while and then go and find the Lama. Master Fuap closed his eyes and entered into meditation. In a few moments he was surrounded by golden light. After a few more minutes, the golden light emanating from him became so thick that I could hardly see him, even though we were sitting outdoors, and it was broad daylight. After watching the golden light flow around Master Fuap for several minutes, I closed my eyes and let my mind relax. The next thing I knew, Master Fuap was tapping me on the shoulder. I opened my eyes and, much to my surprise, it was almost dark. I had been sitting in meditation for several hours, even though it had only seemed like seconds to me. Master Fuap was definitely right. The higher pranic currents in the valley made it much easier for me to meditate. Master Fuap stood up and stretched. Then the two of us started walking in silence back to the monastery. The only noise that could be heard in the valley was the sound of our feet echoing against the ancient courtyard steps. Last chapter, The Emptiness of Snow. Master Fuap and I spent several more days staying at the Cliff Monastery. During that time I had the chance to practice meditation and learn more Nepali. Toward the end of our stay, I began to feel restless. Master Fuap told me that the pranic currents in the valley were a little too strong for me, and that was why I was feeling the way I was. We left the monastery and followed a trail that took us through a series of valleys between several large snow-covered mountain ranges. It seemed strange to be hiking through green fields and forests, when we were always surrounded on both sides by steep, snow-covered mountains. We passed through several small villages along our route. Master Fuap seemed to be friends with everyone who lived in Nepal. Wherever we went, we were treated as honored guests. We were given food and buttered tea by the villagers without having to ask, and many of the villagers politely inquired if the board that I was carrying on my back was a religious object. On the fifth day of our journey, we ascended a high mountain pass. We spent the better part of the morning hiking straight up. When we reached the summit of the mountain, we sat down to rest on the snow and ice-covered ground. As usual, I was soaked with perspiration from our climb, and Master Fuap didn't seem to have perspired at all. We sat in silence for a few minutes. Gradually the pounding in my chest subsided and my breathing evened out. I turned to look at Master Fuap, and I saw that he had closed his eyes and was absorbed in meditation. I looked down at the scenery below me. The green valleys and snow-covered mountains of Nepal seemed to stretch out into forever. The world was silent and beautiful. Unlike the stressed-out world that I came from, this world had no sound of cars, no smog, no other signs of man's progress. The world that met my eyes here was uncorrupted and naturally pure. You see, this is life, Master Fuap began. It is empty and pure, like the snow on the Himalayas. I turned and saw that Master Fuap had opened his eyes and was looking out at the same scene I had been absorbed in just moments before. But Master Fuap, how can you say life is empty and pure like snow? The world man has created is a horrible place, It is filled with noise and pollution. This is one of the few clean places left on the earth, and that's not the half of it. People are cruel to each other. They kill each other in wars, steal from each other, and oppress each other in a thousand different ways. How can you say the world is empty and pure? I think it is the opposite. It is crowded and impure. Yes, he replied, to the outward eye it might seem that way. But first you must understand the emptiness and purity of our Himalayan snow, then perhaps you will see why I believe that the world's is empty and pure too. Master Fuap, I don't understand what you mean. The Himalayan snow is empty and pure. By that I mean that it comes from the sky, covers the mountains, and then melts in the warmth of sunlight. The snow here can be so thick when it falls that you cannot see 1 foot in front of your face. It changes the mountains. It turns them from the color of stone to pure white. So what does that have to do with the world being empty and pure? I asked. The world is empty and pure, he gently replied. It has always been that way, and it will be so, for all of time. That cannot be changed by any of us. Master Fuap, I still don't think I understand what you mean by emptiness. Emptiness, he replied, is a word that implies absence. I could also use the words fullness beyond comprehension. They would mean the. But Master Fuap, emptiness and fullness are opposites. How can they mean the same thing? There are two worlds in front of us at all times, Master Fuap patiently explained. One world everyone can see, and the other one is invisible to everyone except the enlightened. The world that everyone can see appears to be very solid, but in actuality it is not. The world we cannot see appears to have no reality to it at all, but in actuality it is much more solid and real than the world we see before us every day. The visible world we call life, and the invisible world is death, Master Fuap continued. Perhaps death is not its only condition, but I cannot think of a better word. The apparent solidity of the visible world is ephemeral, he remarked casually. Nothing lasts here, all the works of man end every second. They have absolutely no substance to them at all. Master Fuap, how can that be? The world exists forever, how can it end every second? I will show you. The moment that we are in right now exists. Now it has passed and we are in a new moment. Now that moment has passed and we are in yet another moment. When each moment ends, he continued, the world ends with it. In each new moment, the world is created again. These momentary endings and creations are what you call life. Your mind and your body experience them continuously without your realizing it. All of the things that happen in a moment, end in a moment. Who knows why? It is just that way. Human beings fool themselves into thinking there is a past and a future, and that things last and matter. But it is an illusion of perception. Nothing lasts and nothing really matters, he said. Things just seem to last and matter when you experience life through your senses, and through the perceptions of your physical mind. This is what I mean by emptiness. The world you see all around you lacks any kind of solidity. From moment to moment it comes and goes. Why allow yourself to be bothered by anything transient that occurs here? I know you mean well, Master Fuap said with a light-hearted laugh, and that your heart is pure. This is why Karma selected you to be my disciple. You were born with a pure heart, that is to say with a pure aura. You have a pure aura because you meditated in so many of your past incarnations, and in that process you eliminated all of the impurities from your inner being. But wisdom tells us that our concerns, the things in life that upset us, are unreal. They only appear to matter when we don't see life as the enlightened do. How do the enlightened see life, Master Fuap? You were enlightened in many of your past lives, you should know, he replied cuttingly. Well, if I was, I certainly don't remember it. Would you please tell me how all of this looks to a person who is enlightened? We are all made up of vibrating particles of intelligent light, he replied. That, however, is only one side of our nature. We have another side. It is the side that only the enlightened can see. The emptiness of snow is death, Master Fuap said as he made a sweeping gesture with his hand that took in everything that we could see in the vast panorama before us. It is the other side of all of this, what you call life. What is death, Master Fuap?
Why, dear boy, death is life.
Then I suppose that life is death? I asked hesitantly.
Yes, exactly.
Now you have it.
Very good.
And so saying, Master Fuap gave me a beaming smile.
Great, Master Fuap, but what does it mean?
Why, it means that the world is perfect. Nothing and no one can change it at all. The invisible world that only the enlightened can see is essence, it is eternal life. That is what we return to when we die. We go back into perfect eternal light for a while, and then we reincarnate. To suffer because of anything you see, feel or experience here in the world of moment to moment is a mistake. It is like becoming upset over a frightening dream. Dreams are insubstantial, they don't last. When you wake up, no matter how vivid your dream was, it is past. It no longer exists, so why allow yourself to be upset over something that no longer exists? When you can see the other side of life, the world you refer to as death, the mysterious undiscovered universe that lies just beyond our mind and senses, all of the pain and frustration of your life will go away. You will see that everything and everyone you love, who may appear to have been destroyed, are still just fine. They have simply moved from the world of moment to moment, back into the world of emptiness. They have returned to the reservoir of life that we call Nirvana. The world is empty, Master Fuap almost whispered. All of the people and places, the earth, the seas, mountains, deserts, forests and cities, and the beings that inhabit them, are unchangeable. They appear to change, oh yes, he suddenly said loudly. But one part of them returns to Nirvana, and another part of them comes forward. You cannot see it, so it is like a magician's trick. We are convinced that something has occurred, when in reality nothing has happened at all. Master Fuap, how can this be? It is the perfection of life, he responded with a broad smile. Let me give you an example, then perhaps you will understand why I am not sad, as you are, about what has happened to the earth. Consider children who are born into this world, they pass through many stages. They become adolescents, young adults, they enter into middle age, and then into old age. Then they die. Now it would appear, looking just at the surface of life, that they have gone through many changes, and then disappeared. But this is not the entire picture at all. On the other side of this life there are endless dimensions, endless realities that stretch on into infinity. There are worlds of form and dimensionality that are similar to our own. There are also formless worlds that are made up of pure and perfect light. Beyond both the formless and the form worlds, there is something else, Nirvana. The endless and perfect source of all. Nirvana is where all of these endless worlds of formlessness and form come from. But Master Fuap, how can this be? Are you saying that everything that exists now existed in Nirvana before it came here?
Exactly.
Everything is forever. There is no beginning and ending to life. There is no middle either. Things appear in this world for a short time. They have come here from Nirvana. They exist here for a short time, and then they return to Nirvana. Nirvana is emptiness. He continued. It contains everything that has ever been, is now, or ever will be.
Does that mean that Nirvana is heaven, Master Fuap?
Not in the way that you mean, he replied.
Well, if it is not heaven, what is it?
Think of Nirvana as an endless ocean of ultimately intelligent light, he replied. It stretches on forever, in all directions and throughout all times. It holds within itself, in seed form, all that can ever be. From time to time, manifest parts of Nirvana appear here, in what we call the world. Then, after some time, these things dissolve back into essence, into the nirvanic formlessness. Nothing can die, and nothing can be reborn. Things only change their outer appearance. When you can see within things and people, you discover that their essence is changeless, perfect light. We are all Nirvana, that which is our essential form, is the essential formlessness of perfect existence. Master Fuap became silent.
We sat for a while without speaking, listening to the sound of the wind rushing through the snowy mountain. Just concentrate on being the board, he said with a laugh. I mounted my board and shot down the mountain through the deep powder. I effortlessly cut in and out to avoid several boulders, and finished my run in record time. Master Fwap was waiting for me at the bottom of the mountain, his ochre-colored monk's robe fluttering in the breeze. After getting off my board I walked over to Master Fwap. It had gotten quite dark, and the cold Himalayan wind made me shiver. You've done quite well. He congratulated me. You can continue to study Buddhist yoga with me, if you like. He smiled. We stood looking at each other in silence for several minutes. It was only at that moment that I realized how much I had come to love this aged and mysterious monk. Overwhelmed with emotion, I turned my gaze away. Then together, Master Fwap and I descended the remainder of the snow-colored slope to the rock and gravel road that lay before us, where the two of us hitched a ride on a yellow and black tourist bus, back into Kathmandu. Copy from published by www.frederickelensfoundation.org. Copy from a very heavy PDF file on the Frederick B. Lentz Foundation for American Buddhism, www.media.frederickelensfoundation.org. Also much of this on Norwegian, galactic.no/rune/mestafwap.html. Else by Frederick Lentz, Books. Snowboarding to Nirvana: The Last Incarnation Insights, Tantric Buddhist Reflections on Life.